2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Dota into DFS pros.
Welcome back to another DFS Army Fantasy Football Domination, season-long domination podcast. I am back. My name is Kevin Allen, a.k.a. the Fantasy Football Geek, and I've got season-long Says on the line with me. What's up? What's up, season-long Says?
Hello, hello.
Right. Topic today that we're going to cover, we've been talking about this a little bit off-air, is, in our first pod, we were talking a little bit about season-long fantasy football, but being early, the most exciting thing to do this time of year is best ball leagues, where we get a chance to kind of draft full snake draft type lineups without having to do a whole lot of in-season management or any in-season management. And we love these best ball leagues, but people have been asking, what's the deal with best ball leagues? How does it work and all of that? So today we're going to kind of cover best ball strategies. Alan, how many best ball leagues have you done so far?
So as of today, which is May the 13th, Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day, everybody. I have done approximately 10. I start doing them in March. And you are right. The main question that I get asked is, what is best ball? How do I get involved with it? And what are the nuances and how does it differ from season long and daily leagues?
Nice. Break it down for me. What is best ball? Like, how does it, we all know what season long fantasy football is. We all play it. We all love it. We play with our friends. How is best ball different?
Best ball is, for lack of a better term, is a set it and forget it. It's a great way to have stake in the game. So for example, just backing it up, you can do a best ball entry from anywhere from $1 all the way up to as high as $100 or greater if you want. And what that is you draft a full team, usually anywhere from 18 to 20 roster spots. But during the season, you never have to make a free agent pickup or a drop. The team that you have is the team that you have. So you need to draft backups at every position and plan for injury and bye weeks. As well, best ball is going to have slightly different strategies and nuances, which we'll go over. And the most important thing about best ball, the reason it is called best ball, is that you never have to make those grueling lineup decisions week to week. The best scorers at each position automatically get algorithmed into your lineup. So, and we're going to talk about that as well.
Yeah. And there, one extra aspect of best ball that's kind of different from season long is you're not having head-to-head matchups at all. In the end, I believe best ball comes down to total points scored per team in the league rather than the head-to-head matchup style of normal season-long fantasy football, which also adds just slightly to kind of a change in, I think, the strategic approach to how you would create a team.
You're absolutely right there, and we're going to talk about that. But it is a roto style versus head-to-head. You just mentioned that. And the main difference, as we'll get into, is you're going for upside, because usually these leagues only pay out first or second place. And in a 12-team league, normally you're pretty satisfied with getting in the playoffs, getting that four seed, and then getting hot. Here, it's first or zero.
Yeah. And I would say my approach, my personal approach to best ball is, and this is a big part of where the strategy will come down to, but my personal approach tends to be sort of a war of attrition, where I think most of the time in best ball leagues, what my experience has been the last couple of years playing on draft and before that on MFL, which I know you like a lot, and we'll give out some of that stuff in a second here. But my experience has been, if I have teams that are still scoring in every position by the end of the year, where I'm basically getting points for every roster spot available, I'm almost locking in first, second, or third place just based on the fact that all other teams in the league, it's way more common to get so many injuries going on that you just don't have anybody scoring at the tight end position. I mean, if you took Tyler Eifert, Jordan Reed, and, you know, I don't know, but basically you could have taken three seemingly acceptable tight ends last year and just been getting zeros all year because they all got hurt. And we've seen the same thing happen at the running back, every position. That's just what happens. So it's the secondary part is a war of attrition. And drafting strategy comes down, I think, a lot to creating enough depth at each position to keep it scoring all season long. And a lot of times that's enough to get you to that top two. And then, of course, hopefully you make good choices to get to number one. But real quick, before we get into kind of diving into the position groups and a strategic approach to drafting. So the main site that I use for best ball leagues is a site called draft.com or playdraft.com. And I'm not sure why they switched the web address once, but if you go to draft.com and you type in promo code FFGeek, when you go to sign up, you're going to get a free entry into, they're sponsored the site, and you're going to get a free entry into a $3 best ball league, which is pretty sweet. It's free. You can check it out. It's pretty awesome stuff. So we'll be talking a little bit about the draft.com format as well as the MFL format. So in case you get excited and you want to go play it, remember to use the promo code FFGeek and you will get a free entry into the contest, into a paid contest and other good things. So here we go. So what's the strategic approach in terms of, from what we were discussing before, both sites use a similar format. One quarterback, two running backs, three wide receivers. So in your draft so far, how has it gone? Who is being attacked early? What's the strategic approach in terms of drafting for each position group?
So even going back, taking a step back, the reason that people do these best ball leagues, these MFLs off season, and I will answer your question about specific strategy, but general strategy is to get practice for their real season long drafts. There's one common reason I hear a lot of people that do these drafts, and meaning that when you go into a room and do a mock draft, it's not a unusual thing for people to leave after the fourth or fifth round, and you don't get a real sense of how people are drafting. But when people are putting their own money, whether even just a dollar or $5 into these drafts, they tend to stay through the whole draft, and you get a real sense of what the draft pool and the market is. Specifically, these best ball leagues, as you mentioned, they start three receivers and a flex. In the past, people would load up on wide receivers. This year, the dominant strategy was to get your running backs early. And I guess the theory behind that and is to get those stable rock running backs you know are going to have a job for the whole year. Whereas with the wide receivers, and we'll get into some basic strategy here, you don't have to guess like you do in season long if middling wide receivers are going to score in that week, if their matchup's okay, because the computer will automatically put your best receiver forward.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm picking up from that, and I totally agree, is in essence, the wide receiver position is a more volatile position by its own nature. For a workhorse running back, we know that stud running backs are going to get 20 touches a week. We don't know if they're going to score massively each week. Sometimes they have a good week. Sometimes it's an okay week. But we know that they're going to get a lot of touches and they're going to do some scoring each week. Unfortunately, what that generally means with the running back position is guys who are sort of castaways or third string, you know, second, third stringers, they might get zeros all the time. Like you might have to, with running backs, you have to take a few with sort of this hope that somebody ahead of them will get hurt or to protect yourself in terms of a handcuff, which is a super important strategy generally with, especially with best ball, more so than season long leagues. But, at the wide receiver position, you know, if you take a third string wide receiver from a team like a Cole Beasley, you know, he's going to give you 2 weeks out of that season where he actually has a big game. So with wide receivers, if you load up on some of these guys, even though they might not be the best season-long candidates because they'll get you 2, 3, 4, like your Paul Richardson circa last season with the Seahawk type players where you can't count on them, or Tyler Lockett types where you can't count, you don't want to count on this guy every single week in a season long league. But in the best ball, I'm cool. I feel confident he's going to get me 3 or 4 good productive weeks this season. And if I have enough of those guys, then hopefully we mix that up and match that. And, you know, so a bunch of like second or third string wide receivers can actually fill out a team as long as you have enough of them, to do so. And I also want to go back to a point you said a minute ago. Absolutely. The reason I started playing best ball leagues is basically because mock drafting is kind of boring. The other people you're mock drafting against don't really care. And so you don't get the best feel for how a draft would go. But with best ball, for a couple bucks, $2, $3, $1, $5, not only can you kind of have a meaningful mock draft, but you can have basically a league that if you're into, you could watch it all year. It's one of the cheapest long form daily kind of fantasy sports formats that you're ever going to see. It's sort of like a daily fantasy sport. Like with golf, you know, in the DFS Army, you know, we love all DFS sports. That's what we do. And like if I compare it to golf, for example, golf, you draft a team on Thursday and you have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's basically a 4-day sweat, which is awesome. Because, you know, it's like one entry gives you 4 days worth of watching DFS and getting all that excitement going. Well, with best ball leagues, you have basically a 16-week sweat going or 17-week sweat going. Like, it doesn't end after week one. You have this team and you can watch it. And sure, a lot of the ones you're going to draft are going to be throwaways, but there'll be 2 or 3 that are in it at the end. You know, there'll be some, you know, 30-40% of them, hopefully. If you're listening to this, hopefully that kind of percentage. You know, I think on average, 20% of them that you do should cash, because 20% of the people that enter can win. But we hope
that
we
can. You hit on something important right there with the number of leagues. And this is what I would suggest. If you're a beginner, I would start with maybe 5 or under of these leagues. See how you do. See how you like it. See if you enjoy the experience. Like most drafting experiences, it's addicting. You're going to want to do it more, and you'll move forward and do more and more drafts. But I would say that for someone who's been doing it for some time, 20 leagues or under seems to be the sweet spot, where if you do cash in 20% of your leagues or one of every 10, that pays for the experience. And sometimes you can be profitable depending on how much the entry fee is. So that's a really important, the number of leagues. Kevin, I have a question for you.
Sure.
In the number of best ball leagues that you've done so far, what has been the optimal roster construction? How many running backs, how many receivers, how many tight ends, and how many quarterbacks and defenses were applicable?
All right. So this is a super important question, and how to approach each position group. So the first thing I always want to start out with, and people listening, and they don't all know this. So everything in fantasy football, season long, best ball, it doesn't matter, always comes back to something called scarcity of position. If we're in a best ball league that requires 12 starting quarterbacks each week, well, we know the league has 32 of these guys that are starting. We know that there's a certain number of them that are viable and good. One of the beautiful things about best ball is the quarterback position in particular becomes even less important, because 2 bottom 12 quarterbacks is pretty much equivalent to 1 top 12 quarterback. So if I'm trying to fill out my depth and I have to make a decision between like a Blake Bortles and, you know, Matt Ryan combo at the end of the draft versus, you know, getting a fourth string running back that's still a viable guy in like the 7th round or 6th round, you know, I'm going with the position groups because I can fill out quarterbacks late. And just, I don't need good ones. I just need a few of them, because in the best ball format, it will elevate whichever one does well into my scoring system anyway. So you can get away with certain position groups like that much later. So it's definitely a weight on the quarterback situation. And as far as the ideal mix of the other groups, I'll tell you exactly what I found. I found that as much as you want to, it's very difficult to get more than 4, really, I was going to say more than 5 viable, even mildly viable running backs onto your squad. Five seems to be the number there. You can, so if you have three quarterbacks, five running backs, seven wide receivers, we're at 15. Your last three spots are at tight end. That takes you up to 18 on the 18 spot roster. And that's been pretty much how most of mine have gone. What's your take on that?
So that's the beauty of doing multiple best ball leagues. You can play with these strategies. And I agree with you, waiting on the quarterback and getting a pair of two or three, Case Keenum, Blake Bortles, even Eli Manning this year, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Yeah. That's fine because on any given week, one of them is going to score. But when you do 10, 15 of these $1 leagues, you can go early on a quarterback just to see how your roster shakes out. And as you said, when I draft Aaron Rodgers on the 2-3 turn, or if I take Deshaun Watson in the end of the third, beginning of the fourth, my team usually is, I'm not that satisfied with it. The only time I really deviate from the running back wide receiver early is if I hate everybody on the board and I see one of those supercharged tight ends. Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz, and Gronk are the three top heavy tight ends this year. But to answer your question directly, my ultimate roster construction is, this may surprise you, is I don't go higher usually than four running backs, five on some days, but I'm looking to get high end elite. Many of the best ball drafts that I won last year, I went running back, running back, running back in the first three rounds, and then changed to wide receiver after that.
I totally agree with the strategy. You know, it's funny. I've done a few of these, and I have had some where I've wound up with two elite wide receivers in the first two rounds because everybody's pushing running back this year. And, you know, if I fall in that weird place where, like, Melvin Gordon is staring me in the face against DeAndre Hopkins, and I'm kind of like, you know, it's either – usually you're making a decision at that point. Like, I was just in one the other day, and I was making – everybody was gone. I was picking, I think, eighth or ninth. And all the running backs that I consider elite, even Leonard Fournette, were gone. And so I'm staring at Dalvin Cook, LeSean McCoy, and Melvin Gordon. And I like Dalvin Cook a lot, but I don't think I like him more than DeAndre Hopkins. Plus, I love DeAndre Hopkins this year. So I'm like, you know what? As much as my plan was coming in here, taking running back, elite, elite, I think in that league, I actually wound up with, it's just one of them, but I wound up with Hopkins, Julio Jones in the first two picks. And I don't know how you come out of the first two picks with DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones and go, oh, this is a bad thing. So there are scenarios where if a player drops enough, you know, you kind of got to roll with the punches. But I absolutely agree. I think especially in these leagues, you've got to have running backs scoring for you every single week. And like you said, four is enough as long as they stay healthy. And if you're playing if you're rolling that dice that, hey, I'm going to take three elite running backs, because you can get three really good guys in the first three rounds. Who are you looking at when you're drafting that running back in round three? What kind of names are you looking at there?
Okay, so this usually applies if I'm drafting in the top five picks of round one, because then you're getting one of the top five running backs that everyone agrees on this year. So let's just say you're picking third and you end up with David Johnson or Zeke Elliott. In round two, I'm reaching ahead of the field, usually on Jerick McKinnon. I like him this year. But Mark Ingram was in that tier pre-suspension. So now other running backs are getting pushed up. I think a top five pick, three running back pairing could look something like Zeke Elliott, Jerick McKinnon, and Joe Mixon. Now, I know you're not in love with the second two players that I named, but substituting anyone around there, and that's, it just shows you how fast the running back pool dries up, because those are the guys that are the rock solid RB2s this year in fantasy and early drafts.
And by the way, I'd throw out a couple names. I throw out names like Kenyon Drake, in that second round late spot, or, Rashard Penny or Darius, Juice in the third round there. So, we each have our preferences, I think, it's funny. I find myself when I do these drafts, and I have five of them going right now. I've done five already, and I know you advise people to only do five. I do, they're so cheap. $3, $5. I do some of the 25s also, but in general, they're so cheap to do these that, like I said, to me, it's just practice for the season long draft. I'll do them as long as, you know, they're slow. Each draft takes a couple weeks. So, like, I want to clarify what I said.
I didn't mean for people to only do five. I meant for beginners to do at least five to get a feel for it.
Absolutely. Especially
at the $1 entry point.
Yeah, that's more what I would say, because why not? Fuck it. Throw a bunch of these out there. They're fun to do. It's fun to, if you love fantasy football year round, this is it. I mean, this is what can keep that juice flowing. You can really see how the players move around. All right. So let's go back to it. So another thing you mentioned before, I totally agree with too. I tend to shut down the quarterback position. I'm even looking at who's available for the first six or seven rounds, but I do enable the tight end at one point because I agree. There have been a couple situations where I'm just staring at Zach Ertz in the face. I'm not in love with the wide receivers or the running backs that are, it's usually when all the good running backs are gone and all the, even the medium ones are gone. And then I'm staring at like a Marlon Mack or that kind of player still hanging around. And I'm like, I'm not really sure. I want sort of a sketchy, I'm not sure if he even has a starting role on this team type of guy right here when, you know, Zach Ertz might be staring me at the face or somebody like an elite tight end like that. And I'm in this weird spot. So, I've had a few where I've taken the high end tight ends and I don't have a problem with it because that position also has some scarcity issues. Not so much where you can't get a tight end, but to get one that has the ability to score, you know, 25 points occasionally. There's only a few of those tight ends really, whereas the rest of the group will all be the sort of volatile, occasional type thing where I'm comfortable with that because I'll take a few of them. But if you can get an elite one at some point, I don't have any problem with doing that. So, with doing that early. So assuming you use the three RBs early approach, are we going wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, four in a row after that?
Not necessarily. And by the way, another name you can grab in the third round this year was Jordan Howard. I think he fits the bill as your RB3. But right after you draft your three running backs in this particular strategy, which some people don't have the discipline to keep, they see a Tyreek Hill on the board. They see Travis Kelce or Doug Baldwin. And they're like, why wouldn't I take those players over Jordan Howard? The reason is because later on, the wide receiver pool gets rich again in rounds 4 through 8. And that's what you're going to see. In this last draft I did where I grabbed Elliott, Jerick McKinnon, and Jordan Howard, in the fourth round, I took Juju Smith-Schuster. Now, you don't really want him as your wide receiver one in season-long fantasy, but in a best ball format to load up the next five rounds with four receivers, the grouping of them together collectively can be a winning formula. In this particular draft, this one that I'm in now, after I grabbed Juju in the fourth, I actually went back to the running back position because I identified Deion Lewis as the last remaining running back that I had confidence that has a definite role and a definite job with no uncertainty. But the three rounds after that is when I really started hitting wide receiver and grabbed the groupings of receivers like Cooper Kupp, Jamison Crowder, Randall Cobbs, and Marquise Goodwin's. Emmanuel Sanders, those type of players in rounds 4 through 10, not 5 through 10.
One of the things that I've done a little bit in some of mine is after the first two rounds, I've been staring at that choice too, that Jordan Howard style player in the third round, against a couple of names at wide receiver that I kind of like more than their draft position. And, you know, that would be Allen Robinson and a little bit Alshon Jeffrey, but more Amari Cooper, who always seemed to be there late in the third, early in the fourth round. And that's been the spot where it swayed me off of that third running back early. And then I'll come back to the running back position again. Not for Lewis, who I am not as high on, I don't think, as you.
You don't like Lewis in the fifth round?
No, I don't like the RBBC scenario. And I'm not touching Derrick Henry. I'm not touching Deion Lewis this year at all. I just skip those two names completely. I don't like committees that early.
Well, a committee nowadays is a two running back committee. I'll take that all day. I mean, there's only a handful of workhorses. Everything else is a committee. It's the question is now, do you want a committee of two or a committee of three, like in Philadelphia?
I mean, no, I definitely don't want that. But what I meant was I don't want a committee early. So if I'm choosing a committee back, or I have what I consider to be a potential breakout stud wide receiver, and that's I'm putting Cooper and Allen Robinson both in that category because I love them both this year. When I'm looking at that, I'm going, you know, Deion Lewis, what's he going to do? Get his 12 touches. I'll take the wide receiver here, and then I'll wait for some other committee running backs that people are inexplicably less interested in that are allowing to fall. That's where I'm talking about your Marlon Max, your Isaiah Crowells, your late grouping of running backs that you could still get probably in the fourth-ish round and fifth. So I'll skip that one spot, jump back over to running back. But I think as a general strategic approach, I normally take four what I would consider to be viable running backs. First two being ideally workhorse type studs, and the second two being more of these committee types, with maybe a fifth one ideally handcuffing one of those first two or both of those first two with whoever the hell their backups are. So if you can have that kind of approach, and especially again protecting your ass by handcuffing those early running backs, that's a super key strategy. Again, if you take Melvin Gordon, I think you and I would both agree you want to get like Austin Eckler on your team late, because if Gordon goes down, we want his backup. We want that protection. Not every running back has a proper or solidified handcuff, but if they do, that's why I've been taking the Crowell Bilal Powell combo a lot, because it feels to me like kind of like that's like a legit handcuff situation where one of these guys will be scoring, I think, each week as long as one of them is healthy. What are your thoughts on that?
I have a slightly different strategy, and I have actually executed the strategy you've talking about in past. My new strategy is to take other people's handcuffs, because again, handcuffing, you're going to have a difference of opinion on it. You ask 50 people, you'll get, you know, it'll be split right down the middle. But when we're in a league trying to get first place, if our stud running back goes down, usually the handcuff is not going to be as good. Sometimes they are, or sometimes the handcuff is somebody we didn't expect at all. Sure, we think Austin Eckler is Gordon's handcuff until some six-round rookie ends up being the guy.
Or Brandon Oliver, the other guy, you know.
Exactly. So guessing on handcuffs and getting it right, sure, it could work. It was great when you drafted Alvin Kamara in the 9th or 10th round last year. Sure, that's a huge hit. That's a league winner.
Or even early last year when you took Spencer Ware early and then you grabbed Kareem Hunt. So that was a thing. But I have the perfect example of what you're saying where it doesn't work out. You know, like idiots like me who sat with Alfred Morris on their bench all season last year waiting for the suspension for Zeke Elliott, and then all of a sudden like Rod Smith emerges as the viable fantasy player, and you're like, damn. Or you had That's McFadden and Morris, and then it was like Smith. That happens. Or last year with LeSean McCoy where we're taking that Jonathan Williams guy and then he got cut.
Like, yeah, now he's on. By the way, he's on the Saints. He was a late season stash by the Saints. Now with Mark Ingram out, I read that Sean Payton, the coach of the Saints, is not looking to increase Kamara's touches by 15 touches a game. I think they're gonna have a camp battle to see who gets that early down grinder role. And sure, Kamara might absorb some of it. I think that's the obvious take. But I think that someone like Jonathan Williams might end up being a guy that could be fantasy relevant. And as I tweeted out a couple days ago, someone to look at in the last round of your draft that could give you a zero or end up being someone that's viable for the first few weeks of the fantasy season.
I feel like if you can get production out of the last two picks in your best ball draft, you're probably going to win that best ball league. Like I think one of the ways to win these, and that's why we want to pay attention to a lot of strategic content coming out on DFSArmy.com by none other than the best ball leaguer of them all, Mr. Season Long says.
Oh,
hell yeah. We're putting out rankings, strategies, not just for best ball, but also for general season-long fantasy football, getting back to the roots. And, you know, a lot of that, there's going to be tidbits in there about different players, just like that Jonathan Williams tidbit, or there's a lot of stuff like that going on. A Hoyce Freeman. That's right. I call him Hoyce publicly.
That's right. I love that. That I thought his name was Hoyce because of all the mixed martial arts. Everyone named Hoyce was spelled Royce in mixed martial arts.
He will forever be. I hope he emerges into a viable, you know, fantasy guy that we get to talk about, because I will enjoy calling him Hoyce for the next 10 years. That's not going away. But you know, these late round gems, the people who won their leagues last year, their best ball leagues, took Kamara in the ninth. Like, oh, yeah, got a ninth round pick. He's going bananas. This guy's going to win. And they did. They all won their leagues. Like that move was the league winning move most of the time, unless you couldn't fill out a full roster every single week, in which case, all the scoring out of one player in the world doesn't help you when your tight end is giving you a zero and your third wide receiver spot's giving you a zero every single week.
So Kevin, who's that guy for you this year in early drafts? Who's the Alvin Kamara? Who's the running back that you've seen go in the 8th, 10th, 12th round so far that you think has a shot at being – it doesn't even have to be a running back. Any player that you think could be the league winner this year that's unsuspecting right now?
I'm telling you, and I've said the name a few times, and I don't understand why people aren't higher on this guy, is Isaiah Crowell. And I know he's a boring-sounding name coming from a boring-ass team last season. I know this. But to me, he's the starting running back for the New York Jets. He's going to get the two-down work. He's had explosive games in his career. The Jets do not employ a Bilal Powell as a three-down or, you know, Bilal Powell comes in as a third-down guy. And I think Crowell has a chance to be just as good as someone like a Jordan Howard. But you're getting him in the seventh or eighth round. I don't understand why other names are going. And I'd probably put Marlon Mack in that category as well. So I don't have – I wish I had a – I mean, we mentioned Hoyce Freeman. He's going even later, and he could be that guy. That's kind of why I mentioned that name. But
Freeman's been going in the fifth round right now. So I think people are starting to catch on. People who listen to your podcast, I mean, it's slowly leaking out about Freeman. Maybe I'm just too inside the bubble with you talking about it. And
I don't feel like it's us moving the needle. I just think people are finding out. I think the sickos who are drafting this early are obsessed with it, like you and I, and hopefully a lot of the people listening to this podcast right now.
Nothing wrong with being a sicko. By the way, I have a name for you that you can get in the 10th round or later that I think could be not Alvin Kamara himself, but someone in that vein where he ends up being an RB1 every week, maybe a high-end RB2. And you mentioned Marlon Mack. I'm going to talk about one of the rookies that was drafted out of NC State. The Colts drafted a pass-catching running back named Nyheim Hines. And I didn't know much about him before the draft. I've done a little deep dive into him. The measurables are good. The Colts like him. He seems to be one of those guys that coaches love coaching. He could be this year's guy that you get in the 10th round or later. I see his name creeping up on ADP boards. Nyheim Hines of the Colts is somebody that you probably want to get on all your fantasy teams right now, or at least a good chunk of them.
I love it. And how about then we take our kind of strategy discussion from before a little bit step further and say, getting the combo of Marlon Mack and Nyheim Hines somewhat partially could potentially lock down that Colts backfield, assuming that they don't bring anybody else in between now and, you know, the start of the season, to where, hey, I don't want to be right. Like, let's say there's from a probability perspective, let's say there's a 20% chance that Nyheim Hines emerges ahead of the other guys, Mack and whoever else they have on the Colts, which isn't a whole lot. Robert Turbin, I don't think, is a real threat to do anything. So let's say there's a 20% chance. And let's say there's a 45% chance that Marlon Mack emerges as the primary carrier. Well, let's combine these two. You know, give ourselves a 70, 75% chance of locking down that backfield. And you can get both guys super late in the draft. Nyheim Hines, no one, I mean, you and I think, talked about him on the first pod a little bit, But no one's really heard of that guy, and so he's not going early. He's going in the after the tender. He's going in a spot where you're looking at a bunch of names that all look kind of unfamiliar. So
right now he's the place he's going right now, or he's going to get. You're gonna have to choose if you want Hines. You're looking at still the most viable running backs there, like LeGarrette Blount, Latavius Murray, maybe Peyton Barber. Yeah, so it's they're floor guys versus going shooting for the ceiling. So in these type of leagues where we have to get first place in order to cash, it's a smart pick in the 10th plus or 13th round.
Yeah, and eyes wide open. This is one thing I always stress with all just fantasy sports in general. Go into your picks eyes wide open. What do I mean by that? When you're taking Nyheim Hines, he's a guy I would take like not as a handcuff, for example, for Mac. I'd want to handcuff that situation rather than just straight up. But the eyes wide open part of it is understand that this is a player who's probably more likely to deliver zeros every single week and be worthless than he is to emerge as an important asset on your team. More likely. So 70% of the time, a guy like Nyheim Hines is going to give you zeros every week. He won't be on the active roster. He's just going to be a guy that was there and he didn't make the team. We don't, you know, when you're talking about a fifth round draft pick, he's no lock to make a team, and he's certainly no lock to play every single week or ever during the season. So you got to do these things eyes wide open.
Right. And it's not about the percentage chance of him hitting. Sure. Like you said, let's just arbitrarily assign him a 20% chance of being a meaningful fantasy player, but it's what happens if, what's the payoff if? So there may be only a 20% chance of him hitting, but if he does hit, you may have Alvin Kamara and a league winning RB1 on your team. So that's ball specific.
Exactly. Yeah. We play to win, in a sense, like a GPP tournament in that way.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah. We're here to win it. So I'm taking this guy knowing, I can take Peyton Barber, he'll probably get, you know, 7 or 8 touches per game, and, you know, maybe he'll deliver 4 or 5 points. Maybe somebody gets hurt. You could take a LeGarrette Blount, you know, he'll get a couple touchdowns this year. You know,
I actually liked LeGarrette Blount a lot in best ball until they drafted Kerryon Johnson. I was like, wait a second, this guy's good. Is he not good for 10 touchdowns? I just thought in the 10th round he was a great pick, but I'm starting to back off my shares.
I would not continue that. Yeah. Because, you know, yeah, he might be good for the touchdown, but touchdown only get you 6 points. And, you know, you need 2 of them to get to 12. That's asking a lot.
I have another question for you. Who are the tight ends that you're ending up with in best ball? What round? Like, how are you handling the whole tight end thing? Because I have not yet grabbed a Kelsey Gronk or Ertz in the 3rd round. I've been waiting. I just want to know what your strategy's been. Who you've been getting the most?
I'll tell you who keeps falling into my lap in early and late. There's just guys I like. So yes, I never have taken Gronk. Gronk is very injury prone. He does not make for the best early pick in any sort of league anymore. But he just get hurt a lot. But
he's a 3rd rounder now. He's a 3rd rounder. Yeah, I mean, first, early second, no.
No, but he's in the right spot now. So I do have a couple. I haven't gotten a Kelsey lineup yet, but I do have a couple of Zach Ertz scenarios. I do find that Greg Olsen is dropping, I think, to like the 5th round a lot, or an area where I definitely raise an eyebrow and think, okay, he's worth it here. I've been taking a lot of Dolph, because I know that Kirk Cousins is very apt to throw into the tight end position, and I just think Kyle Rudolph is going to have a breakout season for that reason. I mean, what tight end hasn't done well under a Kirk Cousins helmsmanship? You know what I'm saying? Like everyone, even old ones, even names like Niall Davis who is the guy? Not Niall Davis.
Are you talking about Niles Paul?
Yes. Like any these guys would just emerge and just be good under Cousins. So I think I like Kyle Rudolph there. And then my favorite late round, I mean, you know some of the names that are going late round. The Cleveland guy, David, what's his name?
Are you talking David Njoku?
Yeah, Njoku, or the guy from the 49ers.
George Kittle. So let me stop you here for a second. George Kittle, when I started doing these drafts in early March, he's on every single one of my teams. In the 14th, 15th round, he has shot up. He is a single-digit pick now. I've seen him in the 9th round consistently. It's still worth it. I think in a best ball format, this guy is a super freak athlete. I love the Garoppolo's there. That's what I was going to tell you. Wait on tight end. Get George Kittle in the 9th or 10th round. Fill in with some other guys that you talked about, but George Kittle is going to be close to 75 to 80% owned on all my best ball teams.
Dude, I love that. I love the confidence, because it's funny. I've been looking at George Kittle's name, kind of like, I can wait another round, and so I love the confidence in that play. And the main point that I agree with the most is I want as much exposure to Jimmy Garoppolo and what's going on around him as I possibly can. That there's a few teams that I just want a lot of exposure to this season, and that's one of them. Main reason being that the 49ers are going to be the ideal fantasy football sort of situation. They don't play great defense. They've got what appears to be an up-and-coming offense, and they have this youthful exuberance. They have everything you want in a fantasy team. They're going to have to be scoring nonstop.
Don't forget, they also have Shanahan, the coach, who is proven to be an elite offensive coach.
Absolutely. Everything about the 49ers, there's a couple teams I feel that way about. 49ers are one of them. Vikings. The Vikings, the difference being they'll play defense, so they don't need to score as much or as often. A team like the 49ers, they don't really play defense yet. They're not there yet. So they're going to be this, I think, really quality offense. You want everything around it. I'm going to name one other tight end that I take late that I really like a lot, and that's Vance McDonald. And I just think people are underrating the fact that this guy is the tight end for the Steelers, and he's the primary guy. I think he'll have big games. He's a perfect late TE2. I don't really like him as my number one tight end, but in a best ball league as a TE2, I mean, we saw what he did in the playoffs last year. He is the primary. People confuse the fact that he's the primary target for the Steelers, which helps him kind of fall a little bit in drafts. People don't actually know that it's him and not Jesse James, who is the, primary receiving tight end for the Steelers. So I like that Vance McDonald situation late as well.
What round do you think Vance McDonald is going in right now? Take a guess without looking at your ADP sheet. What round do you think he's going?
I'm
going
to guess the 12th round.
Oh, yeah, it's good. It's 14th, but he's a mover. He's on the way up. So I think it's a really smart and sharp pick. I think in your average leagues, Vance McDonald will be forgotten about, but all the sharps are starting to come around on Vance McDonald, and I think it's still early where you can get him in those double-digit rounds. I think you're smart to recommend to your listeners to get Vance McDonald in those early double-digit rounds.
Now, who are some wide receivers that in the 10th-plus rounds that you're taking and thinking, rubbing your hands together and thinking, I think I've got myself a gem here that could be doing some scoring for me?
Well, this will surprise you because
I just want to envision season long says sitting there looking like Mr. Burns from The Simpsons, rubbing his hands together. Yes.
I'm doing it right now.
Yes. I like him. All right. Who do you like?
Okay. Well, the first one's going to surprise you because it's a player that I have rightfully so a lot of hate for as far as fantasy hate. He's been nothing, but the Jaguars did pay him $10 million to come on over. And that's Mr. Dante Moncrief in the 16th round. Dante Moncrief as your 5th, 6th, 7th wide receiver in best ball formats is worth the play. Jaguars didn't pay him to sit on the bench. I know there's a crowded wide receiver core there, but Dante Moncrief, and we're getting into the ugly rounds, is a really interesting play that I've gotten in about 30% of my best ball team so far.
And that's a super late pick. I'm going to throw a couple of names out there that I think have potential. One of them is Allen Hurns, the new starter for the Cowboys. And the reason I'm mentioning this guy is because who the hell else do the Cowboys have? Like, it's Allen Hurns and who? Terrence Williams? They don't have anyone.
They drafted a rookie, Michael Gallup. And I believe it was the 3rd round of the real draft. And Gallup is a promising prospect. I think in redraft leagues, he is probably my second rookie to be drafted in redraft leagues, and Dynasty probably about third or fourth. But Michael Gallup is a really interesting play in best ball. You can get him around the 12th to 14th round. He is the Cowboys' likely starter if all pans out well for him in training camp this year.
I mean, I could totally see that, but I am a big believer that it takes quite a bit of time for rookie wide receivers to come into their own. We've seen it outside of Odell Beckham's incredible freshman year. Almost every rookie wide receiver has taken at the very least, you know, 7, 8, 9 weeks before they sort of emerge as like a fantasy asset or even potentially being one. So while I definitely like the rookie long term, like with Gallup, I like him longer term, but I think that, I'm not sure. Well, yeah, I mean, for a late pick, absolutely, because that's good enough. If he emerges week 7, 8, 9 on a team which really doesn't have anybody else, and I will give you this in fairness, Allen Hurns is always getting hurt, so it could just be no one else to throw to on that team, and all of a sudden you've got this productive guy super late. Yeah, I mean, there's a few others that I like really late. I've noticed that, for example, Julian Edelman for some reason seems to fall.
Yeah, that's a great one to bring up. There's no reason that he should be falling. I mean, you're getting him in the 7th, 8th round and a lot. I'm sure that'll go up. But in PPR leagues, come on, he's a scorer.
I don't even understand. Like, did the people forget? Another one is going back to that similar style of player, Danny Amendola, who falls pretty far down drafts, even though I believe he's going to be a workhorse for Miami. Now, these are injury prone guys, so beware in a best ball league. Like, I don't count on Amendola maybe lasting a full season, but if he did, he's a good player on Miami. They don't have any other wide receivers. He's going to take the Jarvis Landry role over there. He should be a target machine for as long as he's out there. I like that.
When you're talking about wide receivers, I have one more question for you. What are you doing with the old guys? What are you doing with Jordy Nelson? What are you doing with Dez Bryant?
With Jordy Nelson, I'm just not taking him anywhere.
There's not a round or a price that you'd pay. What if he's there in the 9th round?
I mean, if he's there in the night, if he's late enough and there's no one else, I'll take him. But
I picked him in the 9th in my last draft. That's why I asked that. He fell to the 9th round, and it was like Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, or a likely suspended Robbie Anderson. That was my choice for wide receiver.
How the mighty have fallen when Jordy Nelson and Robbie Anderson, who's being indicted for felonies, are going right around the same time frame. That's literally crazy, but. Yeah, I would take Jordy Nelson there. With Dez, you know, he doesn't have a team yet. I think if he's falling to that 7th, 8th round level, then fuck it, he will have a team. He's definitely going to play somewhere. And he will be... I have not figured that out.
Where's the best landing spot for his fantasy value, in your opinion? I definitely have an opinion on this. I just want to hear...
I mean, I have a wacky opinion. I haven't thought that long and hard about it. But, I mean, I really think the Jets should pick up Dez Bryant. I know I'm a Jets fan, and maybe that's the team that I pay attention to, but they don't have any wide receivers. Why wouldn't you take a guy like Bryant for the right money? And they have plenty of cash, and they have a rookie quarterback that they want to get situated properly. And why not have what I believe remains a number one wide receiver? As much as I think some of his problems had more to do with Dak Prescott's, you know, sort of lack of touch in the passing game than it does with Dez, like, losing his skill set. I mean, I don't know, but what do you think?
I think the best spot for Dez's fantasy value, and I think it's a team need, I would be really interested in Dez Bryant if he landed in Seattle with no Jimmy Graham there.
Yeah.
I know they have Doug Baldwin, but I think Dez that would be great with playing with Russell Wilson. Going up and getting those 50-50 balls. I'm not sure where he's going to end up, but Seattle, I think, would be best for his fantasy value.
You know, I love that because one of the things that Seattle's never had is a big wide receiver. They keep getting these little guys. You know, they had that trio of Paul, Richardson, Baldwin, and Tyler Lockett, like all 5'10 guys, basically, or 5'11s. And they had Jimmy Graham, but Jimmy Graham is a unique kind of player. But I've always said, like, why the style that Russell Wilson plays, he needs a big guy to throw to. I mean, that would just really affect the team in a positive way. It's weird how they don't draft those guys in Seattle, and they take first-round picks on, like, or early seconds on Paul Richardson, a 183-pound wide receiver. But I've always said that. So, yeah, I like that landing spot. I think it would be much better for Dez's fantasy value than, like, a spot like the Jets. But there aren't that many teams in the league. I thought Baltimore might be interested. They got Michael Crabtree, so their old man contingent is already full.
Well, he was offered, Dez Bryant was offered a contract to play in Baltimore, and he turned it down. I think that from what I read, that his juices were flowing. He wanted to play in the NFC East. I bet you he's regretting not taking that $7 or $8 million they offered him per year right now, because Dez's phone, has not been ringing. But I think getting closer, once we get into training camp, somebody's going to give Dez Bryant a call.
100%. 100%. I actually think it could be the Jets. Again, they're a team with no wide receivers whatsoever.
You don't like Terrell Pryor at all? The Jets signed Terrell Pryor in the offseason?
No, I'm looking at him as a throwaway. I mean, if he emerges, great. And that could be another late-round gem that you were talking about, because you can get Terrell Pryor really late in these drafts. And I'll take a Terrell Pryor, by the way, over some of these rookie names, just because I think, again, him not being a rookie, rookie wide receivers just have – I mean, look at just the last crop. I mean, Michael Williams – how about Corey Davis last year? The dude is a freaking super stud, and in his first year, he can't do anything. So I'm just not confident in these rookie wide receivers. All right. So anyway, we're getting way too into the players and away from strategy.
you know what it is? It's because you and I, we love talking about this stuff. And I was going to say, we started talking about best ball. We can't help ourselves. The juices are flowing. Fantasy football season is, for us, it started. It's coming up. And you know what? I'm not embarrassed to say that we deviated, because we just love talking. We breathe this stuff. We talk like this when we're not on air.
Absolutely. Now, tell everybody who's listening what's coming as far as content-wise on the DFSArmy.com website for VIPs, for even public listeners. What's coming from Season Long Says over the next few weeks?
Okay, what I've already have up on the website, I believe it's on the free wall, is I put up my quarterback best ball rankings. I am putting the final touches, sanding off the edges of my running back ranks, which will be dynamic rankings. They'll change weekly as news change. For example, the Mark Ingram news shot him way down, and I'm going to do position by position. Each week, I'm going to release a new position. Then, also, we're going to do articles on player debates, either or. Where would you draft this guy? So there's going to be podcasts and written content all off season about fantasy football drafts.
I love it. Getting back to the season long fantasy football roots this year. I love all this type of stuff. Conversation. I love arguing fantasy football players. It's my first love. It's your first love. And like I said, we have these conversations on the phone, just chatting amongst ourselves. And so it's really great to bring some of this, I think deep hitting fantasy football conversation to our DFSR members, our listeners, and I guess we'll do the obligatory, if you're into daily fantasy sports, if you're into fantasy football, if you like watching sports and you want to have a little more excitement when you watch them, get into daily fantasy, you need a little bit of help, go to DFSArmy.com. We have a lot of free articles and stuff like that. But most importantly, join the DFS Army VIP package, where you can join, get all of our high-level tools, our optimization tools, our advanced projections. But most important, and the thing that people like most about being DFSArmy.com VIP members, is our Slack group, where you can literally ask me questions, ask Season Long Says questions all the time. You know, who do I pick? What's the best strategy? There's no other place where you can go and you can directly interact with. We have a team of coaches that's unreal, 25 people, experts in each of their fields, people who do this stuff full time. So you can interact with them. You can ask questions. Alan, you've seen it, how things go in Slack. No other scenario allows members and staff to interact together the same way. Our community that we've put together is unlike anything else. So I hope everybody who's in it and listening, they know this, they love it, they ask us questions, they do all that stuff, and if you're listening to this and you're not in the DFS Army, as a VIP member, I encourage you to get signed up. The other thing I will say is, once again, if you want to check out these best ball leagues on PlayDraft, you go to just draft.com and use the promo code FFGeek, that will get you a free $3 entry into a paid best ball league. All right, we're going to wrap it up. Alan, thanks for coming on again, and we'll talk again in the near future and break down another position group.
Peace and love. Peace and love.
All right. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.